page 1146 in the back, as we pointed out up here in the front a few moments ago, you'll notice that there are actually two very different haftaras which are printed in the Chumash this week. The Ashkenazi haftara, which is taken from Sefer Yeshaya, Perek Chof Zayin, Perek Chof Ches, and a little bit of Perek Chof Ches. And then on page 1148, the Sfardi custom is to recite the first chapter of Sefer Yirmiyahu, which parenthetically we, and Sfardim as well for that matter, also recite during the week immediately after Shiva Asar B'Tamuz. The first of the 3 weeks, the Haftarah, the Gimel de Puranusa, the three Haftarahs of destruction, is the first of those Haftarahs is the same Haftarah which the Sfardim lane this week. We're, I think everybody in this room is Ashkenazi. No? No? Sfardi block? Really? Oh no, I think, and I'm not 100% sure, but I think even the Nusach Sfard people, the Ashkenazim who daven Nusach Sfard, I think say the Ashkenazi Haftarah also in this case. But the real Sfaradim, in other words, people whose origin is Middle Eastern, you know, so they say the Sfardic Haftarah, which is on 1148. I'm going to work with the assumption, which I think is a pretty good assumption, that everybody here is Ashkenazi. Certainly upstairs we're going to be reading the Ashkenazi Haftarah. So our discussion tonight is going to focus on the Ashkenazi Haftarah, but we will touch upon the Sephardi Haftarah a little bit later on this evening. As was also pointed out here, up here in the front, the translation of the Ashkenazi Haftarah, Sefer Yeshaya, is exceedingly difficult. In our translation tonight, we're going to follow the point of view of the Radak and the Mitsudos, which I think is, you know, they're concerned with the very simple pshat in what the words mean, but we should just bear in mind there are other interpretations of many of the words. Many of the phrases are very, very difficult to figure out as to what they mean exactly. Okay, so with that encouraging introduction, let's start on page 1146. Haboim Yashvesh Yaakov Yotzitz Ufarach Yisrael. The Mefarshim point out that there's a missing word right at the beginning of this Haftarah, and the missing word is as if it would say by Yomim. In other words, the way we say the Mefarshim, we should read this sentence is as if it said by Yomim Haboim Yashresh Yaakov, in the days to come Yaakov, i.e. Klal Yisrael, will take root. Yotzitz uforach Yisrael, the Jewish people will begin to blossom. Umalu pnei sevel tenuva, and they will fill up the entire land. Tenuva means produce, right? Just like tenuva in Eretz Yisrael today, right? So say the Mefarshim, just like we were missing a word in the beginning of the pasuk. Not missing a word, but in other words, to interpret the pasuk properly, there's a word which is implied. So too, there is an implied letter at the end of the pasuk, the implied letter kaf, or so is the kaf adimyon, the letter kaf, which means like or as. And say the mefarshim, we should read this last part of the sentence as if it says, umalu pnei sevel kitnuva, that the Jewish people will take root and blossom and spread all over the land, just like produce of a very successful year. In other words, the Navi is making a metaphor. The Jewish people are compared to fruit, which is blossoming and which is budding and which is spreading all over the place. So says the Navi, there will come days in the future. Right now, apparently it's bad for Klal Yisrael. We'll see the context in a few moments. Right now it's bad for Klal Yisrael, but the Navi opens up with a very beautiful nevuah. There will be days in the future where Klal Yisrael will take root, they're going to blossom, and they're going to fill up the world just like a successful harvest of fruit. Hakimakas makehu hikahu im kehereg harugav horag. This is a question. Did he strike him like the striking of the one who struck him? If that sounds confusing, so it is confusing, right? Did he strike him like the striking of he who struck him? In Keherig Harugav Horug, was he killed like the killing of the one who killed him? So we're not exactly sure what the answer is to the question, because we're not exactly sure what the question was, right? So explain again the Radak and the Mitsudas that the question is as follows. Klal Yisrael has been persecuted throughout the generations. And Klal Yisrael is subject to difficult times at this particular juncture in their history as well. As the Navi rhetorically, has HaKadosh Baruch Hu ever done terrible things to Klal Yisrael the way he has punished the Umos HaOlam? In other words, Klal Yisrael right now are suffering, and the complaint which is on the lips of every member of Klal Yisrael is, why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu doing this to us? So to respond to that, the Navi says, true, Klal Yisrael, you're right, you're suffering, but in all of the suffering of Klal Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has always punished the nations of the world worse than the way in which he's punished Klal Yisrael. Right? The punishments that have been visited upon the nations of the world, which themselves subjugated and persecuted the Jewish people, they always got worse than what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did to Klal Yisrael. That's the sense of the question, explain the Mefarshim. Hakimakas makehu hikahu, let's start with the word hikahu. Did Hashem strike the Jewish people, kimakas makehu, with the same strength with which he struck makehu, the one who struck Klal Yisrael? Right? In other words, let's just take as an example the Mitzrayim, right? That's this week's parasha. Right? The Mitzrayim, the Egyptians, were makehu. They were the ones who struck Klal Yisrael. Right? So says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says the Navi, did HaKadosh Baruch Hu strike the Jewish people as badly as he ultimately punished the Egyptians? And the answer to that rhetorical question is no. I mean, as badly as HaKadosh Baruch Hu struck the Jewish people throughout time, he never punished them with the same severity as the punishment which he visited upon the oppressors of the Jewish people. To go on the Mefarshim to explain, it's true that HaKadosh Baruch Hu from time to time does punish the Jewish people, but it's always with a measure. It's never in a way which annihilates, chalila, the Jewish people. Whereas when it comes to the Umos HaOlam, when it comes to the nations of the world who have oppressed the Jewish people, yes, from time to time HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes them so severely that the nation is literally wiped off the face of the earth. Right? So says the Navi to Klal Yisrael, you may think you have it bad, but at least they have it worse. Right? As bad as you think you've got it, HaKimakas Makeyu Iko, do you think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu struck you as badly as he struck the Umos HaOlam? Now, on the surface, the flow from Pasuk Vav to Pasuk Zayin is a very, very choppy flow. Right? Pasuk Vav is a very optimistic Pasuk. Right? Pasuk Vav, the opening Pasuk of the Haftarah, talks about how in the days to come, Klal Yisrael is going to be successful and fill up the entire land just like fruit, just like flowers that are blossoming. It's a very, part of the pun, it's a very rosy picture. I mean, it's a very beautiful picture of what's going to be for Klal Yisrael. And then all of a sudden, Pasuk Zayin, without any warning, HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Navi are responding to the complaints of Klal Yisrael. You think you got it bad? It's not as bad as it could be. Right? So the transition just seems to be as follows. Right now it's pretty bad. Right now the people are complaining. So to respond to those complaints, the Navi engages in a double strategy. The first part of the strategy is to reassure Klal Yisrael, as bad as you think it is now, it's going to be much, much better in the future. The second part of the strategy is, you think it's so bad now? It's not really so bad now. It could be a lot worse. Right? So the truth is, it's a classic strategy, right? And they're both true, right? It's going to get much better in the future. And you should realize, even now, while it's bad, it's not as bad as it potentially could be. Yeah.
Right. If you're in a bad place, you don't want to hear that other people
right.
have a bad also. You,
right.
You know, it's not a psychological
right.
thing.
Right. So, even assuming it doesn't work, I would address that in the following way. Yeah. It depends what you're trying to do. Normally speaking, when you employ that strategy in speaking to somebody, you're powerless to really control the suffering of that person. In other words, you know, somebody's suffering, they're usually looking to you to comfort them, not to really, not to necessarily alleviate the suffering. Alleviating the suffering may be something that's beyond your control. So to tell them, don't worry, it could be worse, as a form of comfort, you're right, that's not really going to go very far. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in the unique position that he can actually alleviate the suffering. And because he has the power to alleviate the suffering, and because, as he's going to spell out in the next couple of psukim, he's delivering the recipe to Klal Yisrael to alleviate the suffering, the Navi's not offering this as comfort so much as direction as to what Klal Yisrael should do. In other words, once Klal Yisrael realizes intellectually, it's not an emotional response, but once they realize intellectually, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is punishing us in a very measured fashion, he's not annihilating us, must be that he wants us to do tshuva, because he doesn't want to wipe us off the face of the earth. So then the next stage that they should, the next thing that should go through their minds is, oh, okay, I guess it would be a good idea to do tshuva right about now. So you're right, as pure comfort, it's not particularly, you know, it's not a good strategy. But as an intellectual awakening that hopefully will lead them to do tshuva, so that apparently the Navi holds, that is a good strategy, you know. Pasuk Ches, the first three words are very difficult to translate. B'sase'ah, explained in Mefarshim, is a poetic rendering of the word b'se'ah. A se'ah is a measurement, right? So explain the Mefarshim, first of all, sase'ah, you know, the repetition is just a poetic form of the word se'ah, with a measure. What does it mean with a measure? So explain the Mefarshim that this is following through on what we just had in the last pasuk. The Navi is going on to describe and to spell out the difference in the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes the Jewish people versus the way in which he punishes the nations of the world, the Umos HaOlam. When it comes to the Jewish people, God punishes them b'se'ah, with a measure. In other words, it's not full force, it's not annihilation, it's not destruction, but it's b'se'ah, it's with a measure. Right, God does it in a gradual and a limited fashion. Specifically, b'shalcha tirivena. Now we see the word b'shalcha. Our intuition is to translate that as to have something to do with l'shloach, to send away. Explain the mefarshim. At least, again, this is somewhat of a matter of contention. But at least the Radak, the Mitzudos explain that the word shalcha is related to the word shlochim, which is the term used sometimes in Tanakh and also in Mishnayos to refer to a field. B'shalcha means with regard to its field. B'shalcha tirivena, riv, like tirivena, like the word riv, to have an argument or a fight. Explain the Radak and the Mitzudos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that the way in which he takes revenge or he exacts punishment from Klal Yisrael is to first go after their possessions, not their bodies. So b'shalcha tirivena, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's first step in punishing the Jewish people is to wage a war against their fields. Remember, it's an agricultural society, so to punish their fields is to go after their possessions, as opposed to going after the Jewish people directly, as opposed to going after their bodies. So says the Navi to Klal Yisrael, take a little bit of comfort from that and realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu not only is punishing you gradually and in a limited sense, but initially he doesn't even, you know, give you full force. He doesn't even, touch your bodies. He goes first against your possessions. Hagah Berucho HaKasha B'yom Kodim. He knocks in a way with his strong wind, with his hard wind, on an eastern day. In other words, going back to what the Navi said just a moment ago, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wages war against the fields of Klal Yisrael before trying to touch the bodies of Klal Yisrael. So all HaKadosh Baruch Hu does initially is to send a strong eastern wind which destroys the fruit in the field. Now that's bad, right? I mean, again, if you undermine, if you don't do that on a large enough scale, if you undermine the produce in a particular country, so ultimately that's going to have ramifications for the people of that country. But at least, you know, it's an initial warning, and it doesn't hit the Jewish people right over the head full force with the full power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's wrath, right? So it's limited. So these past two psukim, Zion and Ches, are pointing out that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's wrath and anger against the Jewish people, even when they do something wrong, is limited, it's gradual, And it's not an all-out attack the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sometimes does in dealing with the nations of the world. Glochein. Now that we've established this, says the Navi to Klal Yisrael, therefore, so again, as the question was raised before, so, okay, so why are you telling me this? So the reason I'm telling you this, says the Navi to Klal Yisrael, is because I want you to do tshuva. Right? In other words, once you realize that my punishment is not of the nature of a full force annihilation, but rather it's a slap on the wrist gradually getting stronger in order to give you a wake-up call. So, b'zos yichupar avon Yaakov. So now, I'm telling you that if you do the following, the sin of Yaakov, the sin of Klal Yisrael, will be forgiven. V'zeh kol pri hasir chatoso. And this will be like the fruit of, this will be the fruit of removing his sin. In other words, we've been talking about the metaphor of fruit in the previous psukim. The fruit, the results of Klal Yisrael removing their sin is going to be the following. The sumo kol avne mizbeach, ka avne gir menu potsos, lo yokumu asherim b'chamonim. What you have to do, says the Navi to Klal Yisrael, is as follows. You should take all of the stones of the altars that you have built for Avodah Zarah, and you should utterly annihilate them and make them like chalk dust. Ka'avne gir. You should make them gir, even in my language is chalk. Right? So you should take these big altars that you've built up to the Avodah Zarahs, you should smash them till they become like chalk dust. Lo yakumu asherim v'chamonim. There shouldn't be any of these asherim v'chamonim, any of these various Avodah Zarahs, these idols, which dotted Klal Yisrael, they should be utterly destroyed and utterly gotten rid of, and then we can begin to talk, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, about mitigating your punishment. Right? So again, just to sum up so far, there's a glorious future for Klal Yisrael. Right now things are not so good, but realize the Navi tells Klal Yisrael that the reason things are not so good is because you're worshipping Avodah Zarah, and realize that the punishment is limited in scope precisely to give you an opportunity to do tshuva. So do tshuva, right? So now that we understand all of that, says the Navi to Klal Yisrael, so now the onus is on you, Klal Yisrael, to get rid of your, to get rid of those mizbechos, to get rid of those altars, to utterly smash them, to utterly destroy them, and then we can reestablish the relationship, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. Otherwise, in Pasuk Yud, things are not going to be good. Ki'ir b'tzura badad. Because if you don't do this, says the Navi, the fortified city is going to be left all alone by itself. It's going to be deserted. Nove, and the dwelling place where you now are, will be Meshuach v'nezav kamidbar, will be sent away and abandoned, just like the desert. In other words, in very, very concrete terms, if you don't do this, if you don't get rid of the Avodah Zarah, there's going to come a galus. I mean, that's exactly what the Navi is talking about. The fortified cities, in other words, your pride and joy, you know, your big cities that you take pride in right now, that are fortified, that are, you know, the center of your civilization, will be badad, they'll be abandoned, because there won't be any people left in them. The people are going to go into galus. Naveh, the place which right now is a dwelling place, will become as desolate as the desert. I'm going to send you into galus, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Klal Yisrael. Unless you shape up, that's going to be the result. Sham yira egel v'sham yirbats. In these cities, which were once teeming with human life, the calves are going to move in and call it home. Sham yira egel, right? The calves, you know, looking for a place to settle down, they're going to move into these main cities. They're going to look for pasture there. In other words, the cities are going to be desolate of human population. Misham your butts, they're going to crouch there, the calves. Right? In other words, there won't be any people left there. It's reminiscent of what Yirmiyahu HaNavi writes in Megillas Eicha, Shualim Hilchuvo, right? Describing the Churban Habayis. So Yirmiyahu HaNavi says there were foxes, you know, running about on the Har Habayis. Right? So in a similar sense, Yishaya HaNavi is saying here, I mean, Yirmiyahu saw foxes, Yishaya saw calves. I don't know what the difference is, you know, why calves here, why foxes here, but the point is, it's going to be desolate of human life. It's just going to be a bunch of calves running around, and there won't be any people there. The last two words of the pasuk are a different phrase. V'chilo si'ifeha. And God is going to destroy all of the branches of those cities. Again, we're back to a metaphor. The city doesn't literally have branches. But in other words, we were talking about Klal Yisrael using the metaphor of fruit before. Right? So all of the branches are going to be utterly cut off. In other words, again, yep, the families, everything's going to go into galus. And what's more, continuing the metaphor of branches in Pasuk Yud Aleph, Bivosh Kitzira Tishovarna, when the harvested branches are dried out, they will be broken. The image of Klal Yisrael, which is being painted by the Navi, is the image of an old tree, which is all, you know, dead and dried out. So the branches which are withered, you know, break off at the slightest provocation. You don't have to do much in order to break them off. Noshim ba'os me'iros osa. The women can come and they break off these dried branches, me'iros osa, right? They set them on fire, just like the word or. Right? Or is light, but or is, you know, where does or come from? Or comes from fire, right? So the women will come, they'll break off the branches and make them into kindling wood. That's what's going to happen to Klal Yisrael. Kilo ambinosu. Why is all this going to befall the Jewish people? Because they're just not smart, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not that they're not smart, that they, you know, got below a certain score on the SAT, right? But in other words, they're not smart from a religious perspective. If they had seichel, I just outlined for them what they're supposed to do, right? I just told you exactly what you're supposed to do. You're being punished gradually so that you can learn this lesson. You know, the program is destroy your avodah zarah and you'll be fine. But if you can't comprehend that, if God tells you what you do and you still don't do it, so I have no pity on you. Al kein lo yirachamenu al seyu. So if you're not going to be intelligent enough to forestall your own end, so then says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, your Creator has no rachmanus on you. I tell you what you do and you don't do it, so okay, so it's your fault. V'yotzra lo yichunenu. And the one who fashioned you, the one who fashioned Klal Yisrael, has no compassion on you, has no pity on you. If you're given instructions as to what you're supposed to do, and you don't do it, so what kind of achmanus do you want from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I told you what to do. So these past couple of psukim strike a very dreary note. Right? These are psukim of punishment. These are psukim of desolation, and especially since we know that ultimately the galus comes, ultimately the Jewish people don't listen, and ultimately the description that Yeshaya HaNavi gives, Ki'ir b'tzura b'adav, Navim Meshurach v'nezav kamidbar, that the fortified cities are going to be empty, that the dwelling places are going to be desolate like the desert, all of that comes true. It gives a tremendous poignancy to when you're reading these psukim, because we realize that in the end, you know, the Jewish people didn't listen, and everything here was fulfilled chapter and verse, the way Yeshaya HaNavi spelled it out. And then all of a sudden, without warning, we're back into a rosy description of what's going to be. B'hoyo b'yom ahu, yachbot Hashem, m'shibolas ha'nohor, ad nachal mitzrayim. It's going to happen on that day that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to collect the Jewish people from shibolas ha'nohor, from the river, which is running very, very swiftly, up until the Nachal Mitzrayim, up until the canal of Egypt. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to go collecting people. The Shibolas HaNohar, the surging river, the river which runs very quickly, writes the Radak, in a reference to something that many people may have heard of, says the Radak, this is the river Sambatyom. So the river Sambatyom, tradition tells us, when the ten tribes were exiled, they were sent to the other side of this river Sambatyom, which is this, you know, incredibly surging river, you know, this river nobody is able to cross. That's why we can't find the ten tribes. They're on the other side of the river Sambatyom. The only time the river Sambatyom stops is on Shabbos, right? But on Shabbos they can't come across the river, so, you know, they're stuck, right? And I guess, I don't know, maybe the river doesn't wait for Rabbi Natan. I don't know, you know, whatever it is, you know, the river starts up again. So says the Radak, that tradition of the river Sambatyon is hinted at in this pasuk, Mishibolas HaNohar, the surging river, the river which nobody can cross, right? So even the Aseres HaShvatim, which are on the other side of that river Sambatyon, the Shibolas HaNohar, are going to be gathered in by HaKadosh Baruch Hu on that day. the attempt to look to le'echad echad b'nei Yisrael, and you will be gathered up one by one, Klal Yisrael. In other words, there's going to come a day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, where no matter how far you're scattered, Klal Yisrael, you're going to go into Golus. You're right, you're going to go into Golus. You're not going to fix your ways. I know that, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're going to become the Nove Meshulach Venezav Kamidbar. You're going to become like that desolate city, which is abandoned like a desert. But you know, there's going to come a day where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to go around the entire world, gathering up the Jewish people one by one. And even from the other side of the river Sambatyon, where you'd think that they're inaccessible, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to pull them together. And what's he going to do? V'hoyo bayom ahu, there's a famous pasuk. Yitoka the shofar gadol, is going to happen on that day. The great shofar is going to be sounded. V'vol ha'ovdim be'eretz Ashur, v'anidochim be'eretz Mitzrayim. Those who are lost in the lands of Assyria, the land of Egypt, are going to come to Eretz Yisrael. V'shtachlu Hashem barakodesh b'Yerushalayim. They're going to come back to the Har Habayis. They're going to come back to the Beis HaMikdash. They're going to prostrate themselves before HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Yerushalayim and in the Beis HaMikdash. Right? This is a famous pasuk. This you can dance to. Yeah. The first part of the Haftarah you can't really dance to. I mean, the words don't lend themselves very well to simple music. But this pasuk is a cheery pasuk. This pasuk is already an uplifting pasuk about what's going to be at the end of time. Clearly, these two psukim, Yud Beis and Yud Gimel, are oriented towards the Yemos HaMashiach. Right, v'hoyo bayom ahu, v'hoyo bayom ahu. On that day, we're talking about that day at the end of time, where despite all of the Golios, Klal Yisrael are going to be gathered back together, they're going to be rejoined together, they're going to be unified, they're going to come worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Beis HaMikdash, and everything is going to be returned to its former glory. So you have a very striking juxtaposition of psukim over here. I mean, you just start off, and we'll see that that's going to continue throughout the Haftarah, almost like a jumping back and forth between psukim that talk about Yemos HaMashiach in the most glorious terms, right? I mean, you started out with a beautiful pasuk describing how the Jewish people are going to fill the entire land just like fruit, you know, that's blossoming and blooming all over the place. And then we talk about the Jewish people and their troubles now and what they have to do to do tshuva. And then all of a sudden we're back again, Yemos HaMashiach, and everything's going to be wonderful, the Golus is going to come to an end, the Geula is going to come. And here we go again, a pasuk later, as we start what in the non-Jewish Bibles is the next chapter. So, hoy, ateres geyus shikore Ephraim, v'tzitz novel svi sifarto, hasher arosh gei shimonim halume yoyin. Woe, says the Navi to addressing, ateres geyus shikore Ephraim, says the Navi addressing the drunkards of Ephraim, who crown themselves, says the Navi, with a crown of haughtiness. Up till now, the Navi hasn't directed his remarks specifically at either the Malchus Yisrael or the Malchus Yehuda. Right? Remember again, Yeshaya HaNavi is living in a time when the Jewish people are divided into two kingdoms, as we know. The northern kingdom, Ephraim Shomron, the southern kingdom, Yehuda, based around Yerushalayim. Now the Navi turns his attention specifically to the nation of Malchus Yisrael, which is in the north, who were known for their tremendous sense of overindulgence. Right? So the Navi is going to talk over the next couple of psukim about how the ruling powers in Ephraim were a bunch of drunkards. Right? Shikari Ephraim, these people had too much to drink. They wore ateres geus, they wore the crowns of haughtiness. B'tzitz novel tzvi sif arto, the tzvi tiferes, the glory, tzvi and tiferes are two words which also both mean glory, something worthy of praise. The tzvi tiferes, which should have been the crowning glory of the Malchus Yisrael, is like a tzitz novel. It's just like a blossom which is beginning to wilter. They had the potential, but they're squandering their potential for greatness. Asher al-Rosh Geishimonim, they place a whole valley's worth of oil on their heads. Right? It was customary at that time, they didn't bathe as frequently as we do nowadays, right? So to make up for the lack of bathing, they used all different kinds of perfumes, right? Oils, perfumes. And, you know, the more oil, the more perfumes, both for men and for women, the greater a sense of indulgence and luxury, you know, was associated with that kind of lifestyle. So the Navi says mockingly concerning these individuals in Ephraim, he says, Asher Arosh Geishim Onim. You know how much oil these guys put on their head? They take a valley's worth of oil and they dump it on themselves. Right? Again, the picture which the Navi is trying to depict over here is a sense of overindulgence, which is what's going to do them in. Right? They're people who only care about the physical. They're wallowing around, you know, they're not paying any attention to the spiritual. Halume Yayin, they're people who have drunk so much wine that they've knocked themselves out with it. They're a bunch of drunkards, they're a bunch of individuals who indulge themselves too much. You know what's going to happen to these people, says the Navi? Hinei chazok va'amitz la'Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring a wind which is strong and powerful. Kizerem borod. It's going to be like hail coming down, like a stream of hail. Sa'ar kotev. The word sa'ar in this context is related to the word se'ara. Like se'ara, we usually spell se'ara with a samach, but a samach and a sin sometimes are interchangeable, right? So as I mean, they're the same sound, at least as far as we pronounce it. So sa'ar kotev means a tempest which is going to destroy. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to send a hurricane, a tempest, you know, something which is utterly a terrible, terrible wind against the northern kingdom. Kizerem mayim kabirim shotfim. It's hiniach la'aretz biyod. It's going to be just like an onslaught of water, which is not is going to knock the crown that these people place on their heads by hand to the ground. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring a terrible, terrible destruction against these members of the northern kingdom. Right. The raglayim tiramasna ateres geyu shikori Ephraim. And this crown of haughtiness of the drunkards of Ephraim is going to be on the ground and people are going to trample it with their feet. In other words, you know, whatever glory they aspire to is going to be knocked out. They won't know what hit them. The storm is going to come. It's going to knock their crown of glory to the ground, and people are going to step on it. The Hoysod Sitzatz Novel Tzvisifarto Asher Arosh Geishmonim. And you know, that glory, the Tzvi Tiferes, which is plate, that crown of glory which is on the head, which was saturated with a valley's worth of oil, like we said before, all of these people who think they're so special, they have a valley's worth of oil sitting on their head, and the crown is sitting on top of that. And that sits no veil, that withered blossom, which that crown represents, they think it's something special. But you and I know, says the Navi to Klal Yisrael, that crown isn't worth, it's not worth the paper that indicates its ownership, right? So you know what that's going to be like, says the Navi? It's going to be kivikura, b'terem kayitz. It's going to be like a fruit that appears suddenly on the tree or on the bush before the rest of the fruits begin to appear, before the rest of the fruits begin to ripen. What's that metaphor? So says the Navi, Asher yireh haroeh oso ba'odo b'chapo yivlo ena. If a guy is looking and watching the fruit, and he's waiting for the fruit to ripen, and all of a sudden the first fruit suddenly appears on the tree, so the person runs to grab it before anyone else can have it. The farmer who's waiting for the fruit to ripen is so anxious to be able to eat that first fruit. When he finally sees the first fruit, he runs over to the tree, he grabs it, and while it's still in his hand, he's swallowing it already. That's how quickly that first fruit is devoured. Says the Navi concerning the Malchus Yisrael, you know what's going to happen to Malchus Yisrael? The enemies are going to come in. The storm, which was being described earlier, is a metaphor. It's not talking about a literal tsunami or anything like that, but the storm is representative of the power of the enemy, which is going to suddenly and terribly come in and fall upon the Jewish people, and the Jewish people won't know what hit them, and all of the material possessions of the Jewish people are going to be swallowed up like the enemy so quickly. It's going to be just like that fruit that suddenly appears on the tree, the first fruit that, you know, before you can snap your hands, it's already gone. Right, that's how quickly the possessions of the Jewish people, the Malchus Yisrael, are going to be plundered and taken away by the enemy. This refers, explains the Radak and the Mitzubos, to the exile of Malchus Yisrael by Ashur, by the Assyrians, under the rule of Sancheiriv. Right, Yeshaya HaNavi is prophesizing at a time when Sancheiriv and the Assyrians have not yet moved against the Malchus Yisrael. The Malchus Yisrael is still relatively stable. But says Yeshaya, there's going to come a time, because Malchus Yisrael is still worshipping idols, where Sancheiriv and the Assyrians will move with tremendous speed and force against that Malchus Yisrael. And before you know it, it's going to be just like that first fruit that disappears in an instant. That's how quickly the Malchus Yisrael is going to be destroyed and sent into Golos through the hands of Sancheiriv and the Assyrians. Bayomahu, on that day, Yashem Spakos Ba'ateres Tzvi V'Tzviras Tifara L'Sha'ar Amo. On that day, says the Navi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be a crown of glory. The words Ateres Tzvi, the phrases Ateres Tzvi and Tzviras Tifara are basically synonymous with one another. Tzvira is also like a turban, something that you enwrap yourself with. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be a crown of glory and a turban of glory, in other words, a source of glory, L'Sha'ar Amo, to the rest of his people. Explain to Mefarshim what this means is that although Malchus Yisrael in the north is going to be sent into exile in a very rapid and terrible fashion, God will reaffirm his relationship with the rest of the Jewish people. Who are the rest of the Jewish people? The remaining two Shvatim, Yehuda and Binyamin, who live in the south. And indeed, who is the king of the Malchus Yehuda, the southern kingdom, when the Malchus Yisrael is sent into exile? Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Chizkiyahu HaMelech is one of the great tzaddikim and manhigim, one of the great leaders and great tzaddikim of Jewish history. Indeed, the Navi tells us how Sancheiriv, after he conquers the northern kingdom, then moves south to Yerushalayim. He besieges Yerushalayim. It looks like he's about to conquer Yerushalayim. And after all, Chizkiyahu and his army are no match for the armies of Sancheiriv. And then miraculously, on the first night of Pesach, the entire Assyrian army drops dead. That's we talked about this earlier. This is one of the nisim which we mentioned, the Haggadah actually is having happened on the first night of Pesach. Right, miraculously, the Jews wake up in the morning, the entire Assyrian army drops dead outside of the walls of Yerushalayim. Right? And Chizkiyahu HaMelech goes on to reign over Malchus Yehuda in a just fashion, in a way which, you know, really allows the Malchus Yehuda to prosper. So that's predicted by the Navi Yeshaya. Right? On that day, when the northern kingdom is destroyed, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be a crown of glory for the rest of the Jewish people. For the Malchus Yehuda, which is still there and still intact around Yerushalayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be a source of strength and a source of glory. And not only that, Ularuach Mishpat, God is going to be a source, a spirit of justice. God is going to be a source of justice for those who sit on the throne of justice. In other words, the judges of the Malchus Yehuda are going to be righteous judges. They're going to do the right thing. They're going to be assisted by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And God is going to provide strength to the southern kingdom as well, such that the armies of the southern kingdom will be able to push back the invading armies to the sha'ar, to the gates. Whatever invading armies come, will not be able to get past the gates. They won't be able to invade the city of Yerushalayim. So this is a promise that whatever is going to happen to the northern kingdom, at least for a period of time, the southern kingdom is going to remain firm and protected by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, actually the beneficiary of the spiritual guidance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But unfortunately, says the Navi, that's not going to last for very long. The Gam Eile Bayayin Shagu. And these as well, these people as well, will err through wine. Who's the Gam Eile?
Yehuda.
Right? So Yehuda also. Says the Navi Yeshaya, the superiority of Yehuda is only going to be temporary. The Gam Eile Bayayin Shagu. You'll see, after Chizkiyahu Melech, after his reign, the Jewish kingdom in Malchus Yehuda begins to deteriorate from a spiritual perspective also. These people in Yehuda, they're also going to err through wine. V'asheichar ta'u, and they're going to be misled through drinks. Kohen v'navi, shogu v'asheichar, nivla'u min ayayin, ta'u min asheichar. The Kohanim and the Nevi'im, right? What he means over here is the false Levim, the Levi Sheker, the Kohanim, the false Levim, are going to err through drink. They're going to be totally absorbed with wine, which is a beautiful metaphor to think about, describing somebody drunk, right? As the person is just, like a sponge that absorbed wine, the person is high blood alcohol content, right? I guess we could say. Tomir Ashechar, they're led astray through the drink. Shagu Baroa, they have made an error in their prophetic judgment. A Roa, classically, is a seer, someone who's able to see things that the average person can't. So they're going to make false prophecies based on their exposure to wine, which is indeed the case, right? The Nevi'im, towards the end of the Malchus Yehuda, when the Babylonians are beginning to close in on Malchus Yehuda, they say, yeah, nothing to worry about, we're fine, we got it in the bag, HaKadosh Baruch is going to protect us. It's only a Yirmiyahu HaNavi later in history who's screaming, you got to do tshuva, you got to do tshuva, otherwise the Babylonians are going to destroy Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash. No, don't worry, the Nevi'a Shekers say, Yirmiyahu HaNavi, he's a little off. We saw the correct, future events that are going to take place. Shagu Baroa, the Nevi'im are going to make a mistake when it comes to trying to be seers. They're not going to be, they're not going to make a correct prediction. Paku Pliliya, the word Plilim is related to the word for judgment. Right? V'nosan v'flilim, it's a pasuk in Chumash, in Parashas Mishpatim. Paku Pliliya, the judgment of the judges is going to be corrupted because they're going to be drinking and overindulging themselves. Kikoshul chanus malu kid soa b'li makom. Very, very striking pasuk, because all of the tables of the chashiv of people in Malchus Yehuda, says the Navi Yeshaya, are going to be filled with vomit and filth. Again, just on a very literal level, they're getting drunk. So they're getting drunk. You know what happens when you get drunk. So that's you go into the high ranking houses of these chashiv and neviim, chashiv and kohanim, chashiv and dayanim, and you'll see exactly what they're all about. They're a bunch of drunkards. They can't pass in a shayla. They can't work in the Beis HaMikdash. They can't deliver a proper nevuah. That's where it's going to go. Esmi yoredei, the esmi yovin shmu. Who are you gonna teach anything to? Says the Navi. It's frustrating. There's nobody to talk to. Who can you impart knowledge to? Who can understand what you're saying? It's me, Yavin Shmuel. When you say something, you knock, and there's nobody home, right? I mean, everybody who's in a position of prominence is drunk and passed out on the floor. There's nobody to talk to. Kamulei mecholov, atike mishadoyim. These people, and they're not children either. They're people who should know better. They've been weaned already from their mother's milk. It's one thing if you talk to a child, the child doesn't understand, these are adults. There's nobody to talk to. The only thing one can do, says the Navi, is to try to teach them slowly. Keep sav lotsav. One mitzvah, sav, one commandment at a time. The only thing the Navi can do, the Navi says, look, basically there's nobody to talk to in Malchus Yehuda. Right? I could try teaching them everything at once, but that's going to be ridiculous. They're not going to be able to absorb that. So the best I can try is to do one mitzvah at a time. Kav lakav, one little measuring line at a time. Right? Again, in the metaphor of measuring something. So you do one line at a time. I'll try to do things gradually, says the Navi. Ze'er sham, a little there. I'll do my best. But it's going to be very hard. Kibalage safa uvloshen acheres yidaber elam hazeh. You have to speak to this people using almost like a foreign language, right? You can't come out and tell them directly. You're sinning. Stop it. Do tshuva. They don't understand. It's like they look at you like you're from Mars, right? So the only way to talk to them is to try to use their language, which is just so far removed from the lashon of the Navi. Asher Amar Aleihem, I try to tell them, says the Navi, Zos HaMenucha, I try to take a positive approach. It's a fascinating Radak over here. The Radak says, what did the Navi do? So the Navi sees that the people are so far removed from Yiddishkeit. So says the Navi, what am I going to do? I'm going to come in and give them the fire and brimstone speech? That's not going to work. I know that's not going to get me anywhere. So what do I do? So I come and I tell them, Zos HaMenucha, you should follow the way of the Torah. It will make your life pleasurable. Zos HaMenucha, this Torah gives you Menucha. Right? It's such a striking radak in the interpretation of the Pasuk, because this is exactly the approach of most of the Kiruv organizations, Bezman HaZeh. Kiruv organizations don't go out to people who aren't affiliated, you know, with a big stick, hit them over the head and say, you know, you should really be Shomer Torah Mitzvos, because otherwise, you know, there are terrible punishments waiting for you in the Olam HaEmes. In the Sfardi world, by the way, they actually can do that. They can get away with that. Right? In the Sfardi world, the Sfardi Chachamim can get up and tell people of Rav Amnon Yitzchak, L'mashal, in Eretz Yisrael today. That gets up in front of non-observant audiences of Sfaradim, and he reads them the Riot Act. And they respond. They say, okay, yeah, you're right. No, you're right. Riot Act, okay, good. No, so I'll put on sixes. Good, you're right, 100%. That only works, you know, in the Sfaradi culture, because there's a tremendous respect, even among the non-observant Sfaradim, for the concepts of tradition, for the concept of the Chacham, for the concept of Sachar V'Onesh, right? They have a concept to work with. In the Ashkenazi world, that doesn't work at all. Yeah. If somebody were to get up in the Ashkenazi world and read the unaffiliated Jews the Riot Act, you know, they'd start throwing him. They start throwing things at him. I mean, that would be the best case scenario, right? And the worst case scenario is probably even worse than that. So that's what the Navi says. The Navi says you have to take a relaxed approach when trying to bring these people back. Asher Omar Alehem Zos HaMenucha. Dramatic place to stop, okay?
How interesting that the thought was written in alliteration, such poetic stuff.
Yeah, no, it's very poetic. It's very difficult because it's very poetic, but it's a very poetic style. It's a beautiful Lashon once you understand it. Zos HaMenucha, so the Navi tells Klal Yisrael, you know, why should you be frum? Because it's nice. Zos HaMenucha, make you feel better. Make you feel better to be frum. Hanichu le'oyei. And says the Navi, I tell my people, leave the tired people alone. You can't read them the Riot Act. You can't read them the fire and brimstone speech because they're just too tired. They're too worn out. The Zos HaMargeya. I tell the people, this path of Torah and Mitzvos, it's Margeya, it's Margoa. It will make you... If I read them the Riot Act, they're going to chase me out of town. But even with that, below Avu Shemala, they didn't want to hear it. They didn't want to hear the nice message either. B'hoi Elohem Dvar Hashem, I tried to relate to them the Dvar Hashem, says the Navi, as Tzav Latzav, Kav Lakav, Ze'er Sham, Ze'er Sham. I tried to use the gradual approach, a little bit at a time. I tried to use the kid gloves when dealing with them. But they totally rejected it. And because they totally rejected it, so for that reason, when the Jewish people, Malchus Yehuda now, when they try to go forward, they will fall back and break the Nokshu, the Nilkadu, and they'll be caught in a trap. In other words, they too are going to suffer the same fate as Malchus Yisrael in the north. They too are going to end up being sent into Galus, despite the best efforts of the Nevi'im to gradually steer them back on track, right? The Perek here ends on a note of terrible despondence, right? The Navi is unsuccessful in being able to convince Malchus Yehuda to not follow the bad example that was set for them by the Malchus Yisrael so many years earlier. Of course, we can't end the Haftarah on a bad note, so we take a two psukim. That's halacha, by the way. You're not supposed to end on a bad note. It's not just a nice thing. But if you look, by the way, whenever we break up aliyahs, right, aliyahs in the Chumash sometimes end in the middle of a thought, or sometimes even in the middle of a sentence, because we always want to be gomer b'dover tov. We always want to try to find a good place to stop off on. Sometimes it's not so easy to find a good place to stop off on. So that's where the breaks in the aliyahs sometimes seem to be very haphazard, because they're just, you know, we have to stop somewhere that was a good place to stop from the perspective of stopping on a good theme. So here, to end on a good note, the Mesadrei HaHaftarah took two psukim from later on in the next chapter in Chavtes. Lochein. Therefore, Ka'amar Hashem el Beis Yaakov, Asher Pado es Avraham, so says HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the house of Yaakov, That same HaKadosh Baruch Hu who redeemed Avraham Avinu, explains to Radak, what's the reference to Avraham Avinu? Avraham Avinu lived in an idolatrous surrounding. He was surrounded by people who had, I mean, obviously had no connection to Yiddishkeit. There was no Yiddishkeit yet. Right? He was surrounded by people who wanted no part of the notion of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu redeemed Avraham from that those surroundings which were very antithetical to the belief in God. So says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't worry, Klal Yisrael. Yes, you're going into Galus, but there's going to come a time where you too will be redeemed from that environment which is very much not conducive to the ideals which you believe in. Lo ato yevosh Yaakov, lo ato panav yechavaru. Don't be embarrassed, Yaakov. Don't let your face go white. So to speak, Yaakov Avinu is embarrassed at the conduct of his children. Right? In other words, if the W is saying, if Yaakov Avinu was here to see how the Jewish people are behaving, oh boy, would he be embarrassed. So the Navi has to, so to speak, reassure Yaakov Avinu, don't be embarrassed, Yaakov. Right? Even though you've seen your children mess up so many times and go into Golus and still not learn their lesson, don't be embarrassed, Yaakov. Don't let your face go white and pale from embarrassment. There's going to come a time where you'll have nachas from your children, Yaakov Avinu. Ki viroso yolodov, ma'ase yodai bekirbo, yakdishu shimi. Because there's going to come a time where Yaakov Avinu is going to see his children, his descendants, the Jewish people, ma'ase yodai, who are after all my creation, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yakdishu shimi. There's going to come a time when Yaakov's children are going to sanctify the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's going to come a time in the future where the Jewish people, despite all of the galios, are going to do the right thing. Mikdishu es kadosh Yaakov. They will sanctify the Holy One of Yaakov, i.e. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'eselokei Yisrael yaritzu, and they will praise, they will utter praises to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So don't worry, Yaakov, even though the children of Israel have gone into galus, even though with our actions we've brought shame upon Yaakov Avinu in the past, there's going to come a time where we're going to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Yaakov Avinu is going to beam with nachas about how the Klal Yisrael are behaving. What's the connection between this Haftarah and the Sedra? So let's think about the Sedra for a moment. The Sedra, on the surface, is the beginning of the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim,
right, okay.
So I think that's the idea which is being brought out over here. We tend, again speaking personally, when we tend to tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, we tend to put a lot of focus on the happy ending, and we tend to gloss over the years of servitude and subjugation which preceded that happy ending. Yeah, the Jews got out of Mitzrayim. Yeah, the Egyptians were punished. Yeah, there's the Kriyas Yamsuf. Everything's wonderful. There were years and years and years of subjugation. And we don't usually think about what that subjugation meant. You know, we sometimes think, you know, the Jews had to work hard in Egypt. And so we learned that as little kids. So what does working hard mean? Well, I'm in school. The Torah gives me homework. I'm working really hard. I guess the Jews probably had something similar in Mitzrayim. They had a lot of hard homework. Right? And even though, obviously, as adults, we kind of grow out of that, but we totally get past that. Yeah, the Jews worked hard in Egypt. Yeah, they had to do a lot of things. The Jewish children were being slaughtered left and right. I mean, again, some of the Midrashim, the Chazal tell us, children being baked into bricks. I mean, what the Pasuk tells us about the children being thrown into the river. There's a famous Chazal, which is quoted by Rashi on Chumash, that at a certain point in time, Paro became leprous, and his astrologers told him, you know, the only way to get rid of this leprosy is to bathe in the blood of Jewish children, which is horrible itself in its own right. The part of the Medrash which is not quoted by Rashi, the Medrash goes on to say that the astrologers told Paro, the only way to cure yourself of this leprosy is to slaughter 150 children in the morning, 150 children in the evening, and to bathe in their blood. That's to do that every morning and every evening, and every morning and every evening to bathe in the blood. When you think about that, and you know, you put that together with all of the things which Chazal tell us about the Sheba of Mitzrayim, it was a holocaust. Right? I mean, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't okay. Yeah, they had to work a little bit harder. Yeah, you know, sometimes we have to work hard to... No, it wasn't that. It was a Holocaust. And it wasn't just a Holocaust that lasts... Not Chalila, to take away from the severity of the Holocaust of, you know, that people went through recently, but it wasn't a Holocaust that lasted half a decade. It was a Holocaust that lasted decades and decades and decades. Right? Imagine the Holocaust of Eastern Europe drawn out, Chalila, over the course of a century. So if you think about that, we begin to get a sense of the magnitude of what the Shibud Mitzrayim was all about. It wasn't extra homework. It was a tremendously difficult time for the Jewish people. And being that the Jewish people had never experienced anything like that before, you can certainly imagine that they began to become despondent. When's the Geula going to come? In a sense, Parshas Shemos is really the parsha, not so much of Geula, but it's the parsha of Golos. Right? The 10 plagues and the beginning of the redemption of the Jewish people don't start till next week. Va'era is the beginning of the plagues, of the Makos. Shemos ends off with Moshe and Aaron going to Paro, trying to demand the release of the Jewish people, and Paro turning around saying, oh, you want the Jewish people released? Let's make life harder for the Jewish people. Right? Now, Yosefu lo says Tevin la'om, right? I'm not going to give them the straw anymore. They're going to have to go out and produce the same number of bricks, you know, and they'll have to get the straw themselves. And the Jewish people come at the end of Parshas Shemos complaining bitterly to Moshe and Aaron and saying, you know, Lama hariosa, Lama say, you know, why'd you, thanks a lot, right? You went, you missed, you got involved, and now things are worse for us. Gee, thanks, we really appreciate you getting involved over here. And Moshe Rabbeinu, at the end of the parasha, goes back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he's crying before him. He says, you know, Lama hariosa, Lama zeh shlachtani, why'd you even send me? Now again, we kind of gloss over all of that when we read the parasha, because we know, okay, it's going to, you know, just hang in there till next week. It's going to look good. You know, it's going to turn out okay. There'll be a happy ending. But the parasha in its own right is a very depressing parasha. The parasha is about the tzaras of Golus. Right? So, and the Golus of Mitzrayim is the prototype for all of the Golus the Klal Yisrael are going to experience throughout time. So that's why the Masadri Haftarah picked this parasha, which is the Haftarah of Golus. This is the quintessential Haftarah of Golus. Because it reminds us, first of all, Golus comes about with Nechato Einu Golino Mi'artzeinu. It's ultimately our own sins that bring about our Golus. If you read Chazal, as Rebbe Sanhefer mentioned before, if you read Chazal and their description of the spiritual level of Klal Yisrael while they were in Mitzrayim, they were not on a tremendous spiritual level. I mean, to put it mildly, Chazal referred to Klal Yisrael and Mitzrayim as Rishoyim. I mean, you know, we couldn't say it ourselves, but Chazal used that term in the Medrash and Shmos Rabbah. They gave up Bris Milah, say Chazal. Right? They got rid of the mitzvah of Bris Milah. They stopped circumcising themselves. Say Chazal, Klal Yisrael were only redeemed from Mitzrayim in the schus of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. They had no independent schus that would merit them being saved. They were similar to the people of Ephraim and Yehuda described in the Haftarah. So, just as the parasha speaks about how the rishus of Klal Yisrael is what leads to the galus, a terrible, long-lasting galus, so too the Haftarah says, yeah, it's your own fault. You're in galus, Klal Yisrael. Don't look to blame anyone else. But the same way as well that there's a hint of geula in the parasha, Moshe Rabbeinu was already given his mission to take Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. It hasn't been actualized yet, but at least, you know, you can begin to see the sun peeking out from behind the clouds. So too the Haftarah also, Habayim Yashresh Yaakov, as much as we're stuck in the galus, and as much as we only have ourselves to blame for the galus, but you know, we can begin to see at the beginning of the Haftarah, in the middle of the Haftarah, at the end of the Haftarah, there are little patches of light poking out from behind the clouds to remind us, you know, ultimately there's going to come a day where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to redeem us. So the theme and the setting in the Haftarah are really exactly the same as the theme and the setting in the Parsha as well. Let me just make one last comment. We mentioned that the Sfaradi Haftarah, the Sfaradim read on this Shabbos the opening chapter of Sefer Yirmiyahu. The opening chapter of Sefer Yirmiyahu, which describes how Yirmiyahu HaNavi is given a vision of the impending destruction of Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash by the Babylonians, mirrors this theme exactly. Right? Yirmiyahu HaNavi is also prophesizing, yeah, there's going to come a galus. In fact, Yirmiyahu's nevuah is so associated with the galus that, as we pointed out before, that's the Haftarah which Chazal picked to be the first Haftarah of the 3 weeks. Right? I mean, that's obviously a period of time during the year that we're focusing on the Churban HaBayis. So the Sfar Adim, read that Haftarah this week as well, because this week, Parsha Shmos, is the Parsha of Golos. So it makes sense to read a Haftarah, which is going to focus on the themes of Golos, whether seen through the prism of Yeshaya HaNavi, which is what the Ashkenazim do, or through the prism of Yirmiyah HaNavi, which is the Sfar Adim do. But either way, it's the focus on Golos and the fact that our sins bring about Golos, which is the focus of the Haftarah, just as it is in the Sedra itself. Yeah.
They also didn't go down being slaves.
Right. No, they went down being slaves. There was a promise, like the Bishop Absalom does say, they were going to be slaves, the Inu Osam, and they would be afflicted.
But not quite like this.
Right, but again, Inu Osam doesn't take into account the Holocaust, which again, it's not out of line to use that word with regard to the Shibud Mitzrayim. 150 kids in the morning, 150 kids in the evening. I mean, that's not a Holocaust. Now again, I mean, the Medrash says that...
That's a
Medrash, right? But again, Kol Aber HaYilod HaYorot HaShlichu. Okay, so we don't think about that. We think about, okay, yeah, Moshe was in the Teva, right? But we don't think about, okay, so Moshe was in the Teva, but think about all the other, you know, Nebuchadnezzar, you know, all the other children who were thrown and drowned in the Nile River. I mean, that's... We're not talking about a terrible, terrible thing.
Yeah. A lot of people will say, like Cat Robinson,
See, one very major difference over there is that Mitzrayim is carried out with Nevuah in place. It's possible to say, if there's Nevuah in place and HaKadosh Baruch Hu identifies and says the reason you're in Galus is for this reason.
Right, it's when they're sitting there as well, and they have to go half.
Right.
Yeah, they were in Mitzrayim, which was the had the influence, right?
Right, but again, the extent of what happened seems to be blamed by Chazal Mavishas and the Jewish people.
Right, exactly.
I mean, it could... There are Mepharshim who say the original plan was to leave them there for 400 years, and just they were so bad that they had to be there. Right, exactly. Yeah.
No, I just want to say when this goes, this slavery is compared to the American slavery.
Right.
The situation is entirely different.
The slavery of the blacks in America.
We're living together in one. Right. Whereas here they had their own homes.
Right.
So they were able to sort of more or less live their own type of life.
What I'm trying to bring out, again, according to the Midrashim, is that it was better, but it was worse. In other words, slavery in America, although it involved much cruelty, certainly, towards the slaves, it wasn't a premeditated program of cruelty. In other words, the masters in many cases mistreated the slaves, right? Why? Because they thought that the slaves were being chattel. Right. But there wasn't a concentrated program on the part of the masters. Let's do whatever we can to annihilate the slaves. Right? That didn't happen in this country. And in the Mitzrayim, although it wasn't a full scale program of annihilation, but again, the kind of gzeros, of death and destruction, baking the kids into the bricks, which again is described by Chazal, that's on a massive scale like that. That's something which was unique to the experience of the Jews in Mitzrayim. I don't think you really have a parallel to that in American history. Not to justify slavery in America, but in other words, it wasn't a program of destruction. There was a lot of cruelty that came along the way, but there wasn't a premeditated program to somehow, wipe out a major part of the black population. If anything, that wouldn't have been in the economic self-interest of the masters to wipe them out. Yeah.
They wanted the slaves alive.
They understand.
Yeah, but they
didn't have
children.
Oh.
happy, they don't want to leave the mat.
Well, why?
The Jewish side. I mean, that's ultimately a question you can't answer. That's ultimately a question you can't answer. All right. Kodesh Baruch Hu should help us see the fulfillment very soon of the beginning of the Haftarah. Rabboim Yashrish Yaakov, Yotzi Sefarach Yisrael.
And we know this has already happened.